This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. 2 weeks after former counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark's explosive testimony, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice appeared before the 9/11 Commission today. The hearing room on Capitol Hill was crowded with reporters, photographers, and television cameras. All the major broadcast networks carried the session live, and with family members of those killed on September the 11th. In her opening statement, the National Security Advisor said that despite what she called intense activity in the summer of 2001, a band of vicious terrorists tried to decapitate our government, destroy our financial system, and break the spirit of America.
As your hearings have shown, there was no silver bullet that could have prevented the 9/11 attacks. In hindsight, if anything might have helped stop 9/11, it would have been better information about threats inside the United States. Something made very difficult by structural and legal impediments that prevented the collection and sharing of information by our law enforcement and intelligence agencies.
Later, in sometimes testy exchanges with commissioners, Rice argued that the president and his senior advisors did make al-Qaeda and terrorism a priority and took care to develop a plan designed to eliminate the threat rather than respond tit for tat to each attack. Over the course of this hour, we'll bring you analysis of what the National Security Advisor said and didn't say. We'll get reaction from Congress and from family members, and we want to hear your reaction as well. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll begin with a summary of the testimony. NPR intelligence correspondent Mary Louise Kelly has just returned from the hearing room. She joins us here in Studio 3A. Good to have you, as always.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
This could be described, in some, I would think, as a staunch defense of the administration.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the sort of headline here is that Condoleezza Rice came and she gave no ground. She was emphatic in her defense of the Bush administration and, in particular, the president personally, that they did everything they could before September 11th. She said President Bush understood the threat and he understood its importance. So go ahead.
I was just going to say we'll get into more details on this in a few minutes, but in specifically in response to Richard Clark's testimony, though, she did not seem to offer a point-for-point refutation.
No, and that was one thing that we had been led to expect she might do, that she might go through and critique certain points that he had made and offer specific rebuttals. She did not do that, but as I say, she gave a very detailed defense, and she laid out exactly what the Bush administration was doing month by month, agency by agency in its first 8 months in office before September 11th.
As we mentioned, there were some testy exchanges. This is between Rice and some of the commission members. One was with Richard Benvenista. This is the former Watergate prosecutor who's been known for sharp questioning throughout this.
Yes, and you've certainly heard that. It was one of several Democrats offering very sharp questions. And we had this one exchange which was particularly telling. Let's hear a little bit of that.
Did you tell the president at any time prior to August 6th of the existence of al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
First, let me just make certain.
If you could just answer that question,
first,
because I only have a very limited.
I understand, Commissioner, but
it's
important that I also address. It's also important, Commissioner, that I address the other issues that you have raised. So I will do it quickly, but if you'll just give me a moment.
Well, my only question to you is whether you
I understand,
told
Commissioner,
the president.
But I will, if you'll just give me a moment, I will address fully the questions that you've asked. First of all, yes, the August 6th PDB was in response to questions of the president. In that sense, he asked that this be done. It was not a particular threat report. And there was historical information in there about various aspects of al-Qaeda's operations. Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the president.
Thank you.
I remember very well that the president was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this, but I don't remember the Al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. Now, the
thank
PDB,
you.
No, Mr. Benveniste, I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
And I asked you what the title was.
You said, did it not warn of attacks? It did not warn of attacks inside the United States. It was historical information based on old reporting. There was no new threat information, and it did not, in fact, warn of any coming attacks inside the United States.
Condoleezza Rice, in an exchange with Democratic Commissioner Richard Benveniste, the PDB to which they referred the president's daily briefing of August 6, titled, as we learned today, Mary Louise Kelly, Bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States. This particular PDB has been at the source of a lot of back and forth between the commission and the White House all along.
It's been very controversial, and we did not know until today publicly what the title was. Benveniste, you can hear there that he's a prosecutor. You can hear that in his questioning and the way he's trying to get her to tell us the title. He succeeds. We learn the title, and he carries on with questioning after that we didn't get to hear there in terms of trying to really press her on, shouldn't you have known? What else would it have taken? I think during that questioning, it seemed to me that was the closest we came to seeing Condoleezza Rice sounding just a little bit rattled. We heard some applause there as Benveniste sort of went after her. That was applause from families of people who died on September 11th who were in the audience. We should say that was not the only sharp questioning that she got from Democrats on the panel. There are five Democrats on the panel. Bob Kerry, a former senator from Nebraska, also had some sharp questions for her, specifically on what President Bush was doing to fight terrorism before September 11th.
You've used the phrase a number of times, and I'm hoping with my question to disabuse you of using it in the future. You said the president was tired of swatting flies. Can you tell me one example where the president swatted a fly when it came to Al-Qaeda? Prior to 9/11?
I think what the president was speaking to
What fly had he swatted?
Well, the disruptions abroad was what he was really focusing on. CIA would go after Abu Zubaydah, go after this guy. And
Dr. Rice, swatted a fly once on the 20th of August, 1998. We didn't swat any flies afterwards. How the hell could he be tired?
And that referring to the series, a point she made repeatedly that really the reason the Bush administration, newly installed Bush administration, she counted out the number of days several times, 232, I think, before 9/11, was trying to develop a strategic approach to eliminate the threat of Al-Qaeda rather than respond tit for tat to attacks, for example, as they were referring to in that series of questions, the attack on the USS Cole.
That's right. This was a point of contention that we've heard so far throughout the hearings, and it certainly was throughout Rice's testimony today. This idea of whether the Bush administration should have retaliated for the USS Cole, if they had, whether they might have done enough to disrupt Al-Qaeda's plans and therefore averted September 11th. We heard from Clinton administration officials last week saying, yeah, we would have loved to retaliate. We didn't have intelligence that was good enough that it was Al-Qaeda to do so. That didn't come until the Bush administration took office. The Bush team has said, by the time we were in there, this incident was stale. And as you just said there, Neil, we didn't want to pursue just tit-for-tat action. We needed to have a more strategic plan.
And there were a couple of points. You mentioned she did not refute Richard Clark's testimony point for point, but there were a couple of points of disagreement.
That's right. We heard this emerge again in questioning from a Democratic member of the panel, Tim Romer, a former congressman. He was speaking about the former counterterrorism chief, Richard Clark, and saying that there was a dispute over whether Clark was ever actually asking Rice whether he could brief the president.
Dick Clark, let me just step back for a second and say
we
had a very good relationship.
Be very concise
but
here,
all
so
that
I can
needed,
get to some
all
more
that
issues.
He needed to do was to say, I need time to brief the president on something.
But I think he did say that. Dr. Rice, in a private interview to us, he said he asked to brief the president.
I have to say, Mr. Romer, to my recollection,
Dick
Clark
didn't.
Never asked me to brief the president on counterterrorism.
and that, of course, in exchange with Democrat Romer and the National Security Advisor. As the testimony continued, of course, these questions of fact regarding Dick Clark, she was largely in agreement with him, but most of the questioning, it seemed to me, focused on the pre-9/11 period and the day of 9/11. How much did the hearing address Richard Clark's other damaging assertion in his testimony and in his book that basically the focus on Iraq has really taken away attention and undermined the war on terrorism?
Very little of that today, actually, and that's something this particular panel has been, I think, very carefully and studiously avoiding. They see their mandate as looking at September 11th intelligence failures, and they know that Iraq is this entirely other beast that they're worried that if they start focusing on that, then there's just too much information and that they won't be able to get through what they need to get through in terms of assessing what happened on September 11th. We did hear, though, questions about intelligence, the intelligence community, how failure to communicate between specific branches of it may have contributed to 9/11, and of course that's been a factor with Iraq as well. Rice, fairly implicitly, she didn't come right out and say it, but she did talk about that the FBI and the CIA did not communicate as well as they should have for September 11th, and that problem has still not been solved. We heard a little bit of that in an exchange between her and one of the Republican panelists, John Lehman.
Were you told that there were numerous young Arab males in flight training, had taken flight training, were in flight training?
I was not, and I'm not sure that was known at the center.
Were you told that the U.S. Marshall Program had been changed to drop any U.S. Marshals on domestic flights?
I was not told that.
Were you told that the red team in FAA, the red teams for 10 years, had reported their hard data that the U.S. airport security system never got higher than 20% effective and was usually down around 10% for 10 straight years?
To the best of my recollection, I was not told that.
Former Secretary of the Navy John Lehman in an exchange with Condoleezza Rice in today's testimony. And as she went through that, the purpose of this seemed to be about a whole set of issues that could be called shaking the trees. This is the debate over whether the administration in its early days before 9/11 paid proper high-level attention to the urgency of the threat from al-Qaeda. Were there enough principals meetings, high-level cabinet officers-level meetings might have shaken out the information that Mr. Lehman was referring to there and might have enabled somebody to connect the dots, as we all say.
Yes, and Condoleezza Rice, I think the sort of conclusion we can draw from her testimony, she seems to feel no. As we heard at the top of the program, she said there was no silver bullet that would have prevented 9/11. However, she did really focus on this idea that there are structural legal impediments to sharing of information, and that was, as she put it, the one thing that might have done something to stop September 11th, if we'd had different branches of the government speaking to each other and sharing and analyzing information in a better way. I think we're going to hear a lot more about that. Next week, we have more hearings on law enforcement and intelligence. We'll hear from the former and current heads of the FBI, the former and current attorney general. We'll hear again from the director of Central Intelligence, CIA Chief George Tenet. And I think a lot of these issues are going to come up again in terms of, has enough been done to change the intelligence community? Rice did point to some things that have gotten done. We have a Department of Homeland Security now, which is set up to share information that didn't exist before September 11th. She pointed to the Patriot Act, that very controversial piece of legislation that the Bush administration has pushed through.
And we should point out that we've picked some of the most acrimonious exchanges. Most of the questioning was not as testy as the stuff we've played. And there's also going to be another important development next week at the end of the hearing today. Thomas Kane, the former governor of New Jersey, the chairman of the commission, said he would ask the White House to declassify that PDB, Presidential Daily Briefing, from August 6th, Bin Laden threatens attacks in the United States. So there's something else to look forward to. Mary Louise Kelly, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Intelligence correspondent Mary Louise Kelly here with us in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll get reaction from Capitol Hill and take your calls. Our number is 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking about this morning's testimony of National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to the 9/11 Commission. If you have comments or questions, our phone number is 800-989-8255, and our email address is TOTN at npr.org. Members of Congress elsewhere on Capitol Hill were watching today's testimony with a great deal of interest. Joining us now to give us some reaction is NPR's congressional correspondent, David Welnick. Good to have you, David.
Hi, Neil.
You've just come from a news conference given by Senator Joseph Lieberman, a Democrat from Connecticut, and Republican Chuck Hagel, a senator from Nebraska. What did they have to say?
Well, they were actually not responding to the testimony that Condoleezza Rice gave this morning, but rather they were rolling out a new proposal that they're making for a kind of a Marshall Plan for the Middle East and Central Asia. And they're saying that while terrorism has to be fought with swords and has to be put down with violence, that it behooves this nation to also think about plowshares and doing the kinds of things in that region that would give people hope rather than turning to groups like Al-Qaeda. And they propose setting up things like a development bank specifically for the region, a public-private trust fund for democracy that would help establish the basic building blocks of democracy, and setting up a foundation that's made up both of the recipient nations and of other nations to sort of look at how to get the region developed. And they're asking that $5 billion be devoted to this over the next 5 years, and pointing out that the Marshall Plan actually cost about $90 billion in today's dollars. They say that's very little. That's just what it costs to fight the war in Iraq for 5 weeks.
Now, as most of the country was watching Condoleezza Rice testify, I understand there was some comment about what was going on the Senate floor.
Yes, in fact, I think this was something that was quite planned by the Republican leadership in the Senate. I got emails ahead of time alerting me to the fact that a fellow Texan of President Bush's, Senator John Cornyn, would be speaking about Condoleezza Rice's testimony. And indeed, he got up on the Senate floor as she was still speaking, and he said that it's clear that Washington and people like Richard Clark, the former counterterrorism czar, are world-class second-guessers. He said, you know, that the president, and in fact, he included the Clinton administration as well. He said, these are good patriotic Americans whom I'm confident were doing everything they knew that they could do to possibly prevent what happened on 9/11. And he said that it's insulting that anyone would suggest that this administration or the previous administration had done anything or had not done what it needed to do to stop the kind of horror that happened on 9/11. He was followed by Mitch McConnell, who is the Republican Majority Whip, who said that he feared that the 9/11 Commission has, in his words, lost sight of its goal and become a political casualty of the electoral hunting season. And he said, sadly, the Commission's public hearings have allowed those with political axes to grind, like Richard Clark, to play shamelessly to the partisan gallery of liberal special interests seeking to bring down the president. Democrats didn't have much of a response on the Senate floor until later on. New York Senator Charles Schumer came out and he said he thought that, unfortunately, he said, Dr. Rice did not utter three important words: we made mistakes. And he said that this administration, like the administrations during the Vietnam War, seemed incapable of admitting that it was doing things wrong. And he feared that this would just get this country into deeper trouble overseas. That's sort of where the discussion stands right now.
Okay, David. Thank you very much.
Sure.
David Welnick, NPR's congressional correspondent, speaking with us from Capitol Hill. Now, joining us here in Studio 3A, we're going to be speaking with two terrorism experts who watched today's hearings. Joining us at the moment is Skip Brandon, Harry Brandon, the Deputy Assistant Director in charge of counterterrorism and national security at the FBI in the late 90s, now founding partner of Smith Brandon International, a defense and security consulting firm in Washington. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Yeah, good afternoon.
And what was the most important thing you heard today during Condoleezza Rice's testimony?
You know, this may seem like a small thing, but I think it may be the major issue. What she said was that some of our agencies still are not effectively working together and talking together. The reason I think that's so important, it seems to me that the whole point of the hearings should be not throwing blame necessarily on one administration or another, but simply saying, how did it happen? And the most important thing is, how do we fix it? How do we try to make sure it never happens again?
Did you have any questions that you didn't hear today? Are there questions left unanswered?
Well, there are always going to be questions left unanswered. We're still debating who killed President Lincoln. This is unfortunately kind of the nature of the game. It seems to me that I go back to this. I keep going back to it. The focus has to be is how do we prevent this? And I don't think anybody really thinks that anybody acted intentionally that anybody actually did not do anything with malice aforethought, and that's, I know that's kind of a strong statement in a way, but I just keep coming back to how do we make sure that we don't get hit again?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that she kept talking about today and emphasizing was what she described as structural problems, and that really refers to the communications difficulties you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, I think it does. It's not only communications difficulties. She made reference to the fact that intelligence agencies and law enforcement agencies were actually prevented from sharing information. Some of those things have been remedied now. We hope they better be. But apparently she said, and this is sad to hear, that there still are structural problems. And I'm out now as a citizen, just like the rest of us. I'm kind of horrified to hear that. That's sad.
What about the argument of shaking the trees? You're obviously familiar with the FBI. If the director had been summoned to the White House several times and had come back saying, boy, the president really got on me, we've got to find everything we've got on this, might that have developed the information that we now know was in the FBI system, but at too low a level?
Sure. You can always, again, you look back. Hindsight's wonderful. Say, had that happened, it might have ramped them up. I do know, though, my old colleagues were very aware of the fact that there were things building. This was not a real secret. My understanding is that the trees were being shaken pretty hard. The sad thing is we now know they didn't have some of the information that they needed. The information simply wasn't moving between agencies, which maybe might have allowed the right tree to be shaken. I think Richard Clark has said it, and Dr. Rice said it. There isn't any one thing that anybody can point to say, if we had done this, we could have prevented it.
Let's get some listener responses. Our number, 800-989-8255, and we'll speak with Marcia, who's with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, I was just calling because I was struck by one thing that being a small business owner, I was astounded that seemed to be a reasonable excuse, and that is that Dr. Rice kept saying, well, Mr. Clark didn't tell me what to do with this information. And as a manager, which she is his manager, he's responsible for bringing information to her, and it's her responsibility to determine what critical information is to be passed up the line. And so for her to continually say, well, yeah, he told us what was going on, but, you know, he didn't really say what to do with it. Well, that's her job. And if they are still operating in that way, I'm very disturbed, because it seemed to me that the information was more than available to the people below the administration, but the upper tiers weren't getting it or conveying it up. And I'm just assuming that maybe that's why there was a failing. But it's not just the FBI and the CIA. I mean, they seemed to be cognizant of what was going on, but it seemed like the administration was waiting for someone under them to tell them what to do with it. And I'm very, very disturbed by that. It seemed that none of the senators even wanted to address that. I mean, that was her job. That's her job, is to take that information and take it to the president and say, you know, I think we might want to look at this.
It was interesting. In contrast to Richard Clark's testimony, when he continually said, I did this, I called this meeting, I went here, I wrote this, very few I's in the testimony today.
I know, and that really disturbed me, because is this how all the administrations work? I mean, do they wait for their underlings to tell them what to do?
Let's get a response from Skip Brandon.
You know, you make a very, very valid observation, and if in fact that is exactly what Dr. Clark meant, I share your concern. I think it may have been more, and I'm not apologizing for her, and then I'll very briefly say, I think it had been more, maybe more, saying, as she did say a couple of times, that the information was not specific. Now, that, of course, that in a way does beg the question, how specific do you have to get? I don't know. The problem we have, though, is not only communication. The problem is, and I was a part of the process for a time, our government doesn't react very fast to much of anything. And we don't react very fast or very well to what-ifs. And unfortunately, all there was specificity, and obviously there have been acts of terrorism before. During the summer, what Dr. Rice was saying was, yeah, it may have been good, but these were kind of what-ifs, and we just don't do that very well.
Marcia, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Joining us in the studio is Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, Inside the Secret World of Osama Bin Laden, a fellow at the New America Foundation. I've been running around doing interviews all day today. Peter, good of you to join us.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask you, wrote an op-ed in last Sunday's New York Times, a list of questions that you'd like to hear Dr. Rice answer. Did you get any answers today?
Well, you know, the questions that I put in the Times were sort of, many of them were sort of rhetorical, perhaps, but... You know, I think I don't think there were any enormous surprises. I think there was some news that was made, this August 6th presidential brief. If I heard it right, there were included in the brief was the information that the FBI was investigating 70 possible al-Qaeda cells or members in the United States. That seems a pretty large number to me. Obviously, Skip could tell us more. You know, an investigation might be just looking at somebody who's running a falafel stand and maybe not that significant. I don't know. But that really struck me. The other thing, there seemed to be a big disconnect between what Condoleezza Rice said, that she told the FBI, tell your 56 field officers in the summer of 2001, we've got a big problem here. And then the fact that the commission has found absolutely no evidence that the FBI was communicated this kind of information or did anything. So that also seemed like news to me.
And we'll get more on both of those points next week. The head of the FBI will be testifying, and we'll also see if the White House will now declassify that August 6th presidential daily briefing that, you know, Bin Laden threatens attacks in the United States, which we learned about today. There were Peter Bergen. There was a lot of questions about the plan. Did Richard Clark turn in a plan to the administration? And right. She said, look, it's not a plan if you can't act on it. I mean, it's a plan to say, let's go after Bin Laden in Afghanistan, but this is not practical if you've not cleared permission to operate with Pakistan. You do have to develop an entire strategy to go after this and not go tit for tat.
I think there are a few disagreements on the facts, but a lot of disagreements on what those facts mean. I mean, was a rollback of al-Qaeda the same as eliminating it? What is eliminating it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Is eliminating it the same as eliminating the threat?
You know. Right. So you know, there's clearly a big difference of opinion about how the Bush administration construes it and how Dick Clark construed it.
Let's get another caller on the line. Jay is with us from Marion, Iowa.
Yeah, oh, Iowa.
Well, I thought it was Ohio, but I was wrong.
Right, nowhere in Iowa here. Well, I listened to Dr. Rice's testimony or conference this morning there with these people, and I personally came away much strengthened in my confidence in her and the administration. A better understanding of the magnitude of and the seriousness and the threat, and in contrast to those who someone just mentioned were world-class second-guessers.
I think it was Mitch McConnell, yes.
You know, a lot of very simplified approach on a lot of people who criticize without having the complete understanding that Dr. Rice has and I think demonstrated this morning. I thought it was disappointing that you chose, I don't mean to be critical here, but that you chose to play the interaction between she and Benvenista in demonstrating the sharp questioning when, in fact, playing her answer to the question, what can this commission do to fix the problem? Mm. That would have been a bit more constructive. And would have spoken to those attitudes just expressed about the purpose of the commission, that is, to find out not, you know, who to blame, but rather what in the system is wrong here and what can we do to fix it.
Thank you for your comment. We appreciate it. I would just say, I don't mean to get into a debate with you, but that exchange was where the name of that memo did come out. Bin Laden determined to attack inside the United States. And
I understand that.
So that was one of the reasons we played it. But thanks very much for the call.
Hard-nosed kind
okay.
of approach.
Thanks very much.
You bet. Bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we're speaking with Peter Bergen and with Skip Brandon, a former Deputy Assistant Director in charge of counterterrorism and national security at the FBI. Peter Bergen, of course, the author of Holy War Incorporated. An email from Don in Washington, D.C. Contrary to what Dr. Rice said, a meeting of the principals to discuss the terrorist threat before September 11th might have made a huge difference. From my vantage point inside a large federal agency, I can tell you what happens when the head of the agency goes to a meeting with the other heads of agencies or with the White House. There's enormous preparation in advance of the meeting in order so that the head of the agency knows exactly what his or her agency is doing about the issue to be discussed. It's this preparation and fact-checking that might have shaken loose some information that, if shared with other agencies' heads, might have rung a bell and helped start to connect the dots. Skip Brandon?
Well, that makes a lot of sense, and he's exactly right. I think everybody wishes that maybe some of these things might have occurred. We're getting into a lot of might-haves. I think what we have, and it's I think what many of us, and I think Peter might even agree with this, had predicted was that we're going to have the same set of facts, and we look at the way people understood them, and what different interpretations on what should have been done. I would like to think still a professional, but former professional anyway. As I understand, things were really ramping up. There was no question within the various parts of the intelligence and law enforcement community. They felt like that the threat was building. Should there have been a head of agent, a principal's meeting? Wish it had happened. Wish it had happened. It didn't. Does that mean that we have to change the system and make sure that we do address these things and we don't wait till we have a catastrophe? You bet it does.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Suzanne, who's with us from Oklahoma City.
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get a reaction to a comment that Dr. Rice made that just really struck me. And I'm sorry if I don't have the wording exactly correct, but she said something to the effect of, we have to be right 100% of the time. They only have to be right once.
Peter Bergen.
That's obviously the case. I mean, they can throw 100 darts at the dartboard, and if only one sticks, it's a victory for them. And, of course, both the Clinton several administrations have had good success in averting terrorism. I mean, we don't hear much about the successes just because they're either they're closely held or they're not the subject of news. But if you just look at the Clinton administration was able to avert a very serious attack on the U.S. Embassy in Albania right around the time of the embassy bombing attacks in Africa. So the problem is that they only have to get it right once, as Rice points out.
And a lot of discussion over the incident where the man was stopped coming across the Canadian border for the Millennium Plot.
Right.
Yeah. Suzanne, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to have to cut it short there, but I wanted to thank both of you for coming in today.
Surely.
And speaking with us.
Thank you.
Skip Brandon, former Deputy Assistant Director in charge of counterterrorism at the FBI, and we'll all await the recommendations of the commission in terms of what to do to prevent the next one. Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, a fellow at the New America Foundation. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.
They both joined us here in Studio 3A. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with family members of 9/11 victims. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about the testimony of National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice before the 9/11 Commission. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255 or email us, TOTN@npr.org. We've asked Skip Brandon, the former Deputy Assistant Director in charge of counterterrorism at the FBI, and Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated, a fellow at the New America Foundation, to stay over with us to answer another call or two. And let's see if we can get Andy on the line. Andy's with us from San Rafael, California.
Hello.
Hi there.
Thank you for taking my call. I was struck by the absence of accepting any responsibility on Dr. Rice's part. I thought that Clark, by accepting responsibility and apologizing, made a kind of human connection with the families of the victims and with people at large. But it's as if the Bush administration cannot admit to having done anything wrong. I think that's why we're in such a hell of a mess all by ourselves. Sadly, I think her testimony underscores the underlying arrogance of the administration. I don't want to challenge her on any of the facts, but I think her attitude is fundamentally wrongheaded.
What did you think of the tone, Skip Brandon?
That's a tough one. I'll tell you, and the reaction, my personal reaction when 9/11 happened, I'll tell you the reaction of people, a lot of my colleagues who were still on duty, people I talked to, was absolutely one of, we have failed. We've failed our country. I think every one of us felt that way. You have to. Not an act of negligence necessarily, but simply it happened. And when something like that happens, we all failed. We all did. Maybe we didn't hear that today, but I think everybody involved certainly had that feeling of some sort or another.
She did speak of the sorrow and anger at the news of the day, yes. Andy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And let's see if we can get Brian on the phone. Brian's calling from Anchorage, Alaska.
Yeah, hi. I know that one of the documents that the families have been interested in getting is the presidential daily briefing. And I was struck by Condoleezza Rice's comment that, well, sort of the disconnect between what she said the title is, which was Al-Qaeda bent on attack in U.S. or something to that effect, very pointedly making a reference that there was going to be something that happened. And yet she downplayed the significance, saying it was a saying that it was a historical document or a document that went over past history.
Yeah, what did you think she meant by that, Peter Bergen?
Well, I'm not disagreeing with the premise of the question because I sort of agree in some levels. But, I mean, on the fact that bin Laden was planning to attack the United States was something that he announced on CNN in an interview I produced in 97. So this was not a secret to anybody. It was perfectly, it was blindingly obvious. And, in fact, I mean, you didn't need any access to secret intelligence material to know that Al-Qaeda planned to attack the United States. They'd already attacked us in 93 in the Trade Center. They tried to attack us again with LAX Airport in 99.
And then the coal.
And well, I mean, but also within the United States.
Yes, within the United States, yeah.
So you didn't need any special information to know that was the case.
And I guess the answer to that part was, you know, though they were at war with us, we were not yet at war with them.
And Condoleezza Rice says this presidential brief was a historical look rather than a warning, and I think that's a reasonable position.
Well, I think it could be her reasonable position, but the title itself implies that there might have been some other information in there that would have let the president know that something was going to happen, not that people had tried to do something.
I think the problem was not a lack of information, that we had a tidal wave of information that this sort of thing might happen. The problem was a lack of imagination that it actually could happen. There's a philosophical distinction between belief and knowledge. You can know something without necessarily believing it.
And the other thing, Brian, is we may find out more if that document is indeed declassified next week, as there will now be considerable pressure on the White House to do so. Thanks very much for the call.
Hey, my pleasure.
And again, thanks to our guests. We're going to thank, again, Skip Brandon, former Deputy Assistant Director at the FBI, and Peter Bergen, the author of Holy War Incorporated. Appreciate your time. I know you're both very busy today.
Thank you.
Joining us now on the phone is Stephen Push. His wife, Lisa Raines, was a passenger on American Flight 77, the plane that was flown into the Pentagon. He's on the line with us from Vienna, Virginia. Thanks very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You were at the hearing this morning?
Yes, I was.
What did you think?
I was not surprised, but I was disappointed that Dr. Rice didn't take responsibility for what happened on her watch, spent a lot of her time trying to pass blame off on others, and never really acknowledged that there were serious problems in the intelligence community prior to 9/11 that need to be addressed.
What did you hope to hear?
Ideally, as I said, I didn't expect it, but ideally something more along the lines of what Richard Clark did, to say, listen, you know, we tried, but we failed. We're sorry. 9/11 exposed serious problems with the way we do intelligence and share intelligence in the government. And here's what we want to do to try to fix this with these problems, and we're committed to implementing recommendations from this commission to make sure this never happens again.
Were you at the hearing the day that Richard Clark testified?
Yes, I was.
Can you tell us about the feeling in the room on both days and how they compared?
Well, in the when Richard Clark testified, the families were. It was a smaller group. There was not as many people there that day, but the families that were there were elated at the apology, which most of us have been waiting for 2.5 years. Ran up spontaneously and hugged him and talked to him and were very congenial towards him. It was very mixed at this hearing. There were some of the families there who were supportive of Dr. Rice, but I would say most of them were annoyed at the testimony. For example, the selective amnesia that she seemed to have. She couldn't remember if she was part of the video conference that was done in connection with the August 6th presidential daily briefing, yet she could remember a speech that Commissioner Kerry gave that seems to support one of the points she wanted to make.
Mm-hmm.
They were annoyed that there was a lack of candor, that she seemed to be in many of her comments, she seemed to be trying to pass blame off to the Clinton administration, to Richard Clark and to amorphous structural problems that you referred to, that rather than just admitting that, you know, these structures were people who were working in the Bush administration at the time and may have been trying, but clearly failed to protect the country that day.
After the hearing was over, we saw several family members. She approached some of them and shook hands. There were some hugs, right. Some exchanges. Were you there to witness what happened?
Yes, I was. And as I said, some of the families were supportive of her and congratulated her. Others came up and complained. There was one woman who came up who lost her mother on one of the flights and said, "Listen, my mother was a CEO, and she was held accountable for what her subordinates did in her company. Why aren't you being held accountable for what happened when you were in charge of national security?"
Why did you think it was important to come and watch the testimony of those? I assume you've been to other hearings as well?
Yes, I've been to other hearings. Well, about a dozen other family members and I had worked together to lobby to get the commission established. And so we have in addition to the interest that all of us have in the outcomes of these hearings, we had a special interest because we had worked for more than a year to get the commission established, and then for another year to see that it got the funding it needed, got the time extension it needed. So we have a lot invested in this, and we wanted to witness firsthand this moment in history when all of this works begins to come to fruition.
And will this group of family members you've been working with now work to press for the declassification of that August 6th memo?
Yes, we're pressing for declassification. That August 6th memo is extremely important in understanding what happened on September 11th. One of the problems we have with Dr. Rice's testimony is she kept characterizing it as a historical document, and clearly at least some of the commissioners disagreed with her in that assessment. But until the public can read that document for themselves and make their own independent judgment, we really don't know who's right here. But what the excerpts that were discussed in the testimony today, the title and one passage about the possibility of hijacking planes, didn't sound like a historical document to me. It sounded like a characterization of a current threat.
Stephen Push, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Stephen Push lost his wife, Lisa Raines, on September the 11th. He's the founder of the Families of 9/11. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now with some historical perspective on today's events is presidential historian Robert Dalek. He's written biographies of Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, and John F. Kennedy. We reached him today at the National Archives, too, in College Park, Maryland, where he's doing research on a new book on Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger. And thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Somebody researching the presidency of Richard Nixon, certainly the Watergate hearings have to come up in connection with what's been going on today.
Well, indeed they do. Of course, the difference there was that you were dealing with issues of criminality, and I think the closest thing to what we saw today may have been when a man named Admiral William Leahy, who was one of Franklin Roosevelt's principal military advisors, testified for the Pearl Harbor hearings in 1945. So, you know, that's a long time ago. But the difference with the Watergate hearings and also with the Iran-Contra hearings, because Admiral Poindexter did testify at those hearings, but there were matters of criminality that were involved. And this, of course, is with Condoleezza Rice, it's much more a matter of policy and politics.
Wasn't Admiral Poindexter by then the former National Security Advisor?
Yeah, I guess he was. He had, you're quite right. But there's also, you see, always questions about letting a former National Security Advisor go before a committee like that. Indeed, what's so striking is that so much of the discussion at today's hearings seemed to revolve around the president's daily briefing, as it's called, the PDB, for what was the date, August 6th of 2001. And, you know, these president's daily briefings are held very, very close to the vest. Indeed, there are some 36 boxes of these briefings here at the archives for the Richard Nixon period, and they're all closed. Historians can't get into them.
This also comes historically. This is in the middle of a presidential election year. This is going to be, as we heard, I mean, first there was the Clark testimony, which was explosive. Then today's news dominated by Condoleezza Rice's testimony. And there will be lots of attention paid next week when the FBI and the CIA heads go up and testify.
Yes, exactly right, because this is a president, after all, who has staked out his re-election bid on the basis of the idea that he is a strong leader of the country and defender of the national security, and there are lots of questions here because of these hearings about his competence as a leader.
And this is all going to be coming out. The report itself is going to be submitted, I guess, to the White House late in July. And the White House has to clear it again. You know, the question of security and whether there's a classified information still in it. But there will be enormous pressure to get it out to the public before the election.
Oh, without question. And of course, what will resonate so powerfully is the debate that will clearly explode over whether the 9/11 attacks were preventable or not, and it's in part going to how people vote may be shaped by whether they think this White House failed to prevent them or whether there was no way for them to have done anything, as Dr. Rice was arguing today.
One of the interesting things, I mean, the commission is supposed to issue recommendations about how to fix things, and one of the interesting things that they're likely to address is the period of transition. Is this always a period of vulnerability because one administration's experts are going out and another administration's experts aren't fully briefed yet?
Yeah, it is a period of vulnerability. And, for example, when there was a transition from Harry Truman to Dwight Eisenhower, Truman and Eisenhower didn't like each other. And there was a lot of tension over that transition. And when John Kennedy was taking the reins of power from Eisenhower, he was mindful of what had happened between Eisenhower and Truman, and he worked very hard to assure that the same thing didn't happen then. So they do try and coordinate things, but it doesn't always work that successfully.
Robert Dalek, thanks very much for taking some time off to speak with us today.
Sure, my pleasure.
Robert Dalek, presidential historian, whose new book will be a dual biography of Richard Nixon and his national security advisor, Henry Kissinger. He spoke with us from the National Archives, too, in College Park, Maryland. Much more on all of this later today on All Things Considered. Also, in Iraq, Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez says he does not see shadows of Vietnam in the conflict now engulfing U.S.-led forces. But chaos is growing in Iraq as troops engage in heavy battles with Sunni and Shia Muslim militias. Fighting is going on in three cities, Fallujah, Karbala, and Abu Ghraib. Also today, more than a dozen foreigners have been kidnapped in Iraq, a new tactic by insurgents who want the U.S. occupation to end. Again, details on those stories from NPR's Philip Reeves and Anne Garrels in Iraq later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.